But yeah, so anyway, so first of all, man, I just want to say thanks for coming on, because like I follow like quite a few YouTubers, right? And it always amazes me, you know, like how they all, you know, they all say, oh, you know, reach out and like, you know, send me a message or, you know, jump on my Patreon or whatever. And then when you actually do that, like I've been surprised, like especially once I started doing my podcast and asked and, you know, people to come on and have a chat and stuff. Like most people, right, don't even respond.
You're kidding me.
No, man. And it's a bit like, don't worry, it's a bit fucking gut-wrenching, right? Because like, we'll get into it in a bit, right? But like, I can tell already just from following you for like about nearly 2 years now, I think. If you and I were like living or working in the same place, we'd end up being friends, right? Because we're very kind of similar, you know? And so what happens is you get these YouTubers, right? And you really identify with them. And then it's like that thing they say, never meet, you know, famous people. Because then you actually go to interact with them. And, like, especially artists, like, one thing I've found really weird, right, is, like, you think, like, some guy puts out a new CD, right, he'd fucking want to come on and talk about it. But, man, it's – and, look, I get it. I'm nobody. Why the fuck would they talk to me kind of thing, you know. I sort of get it. But, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking if you're
– And a sec, I just got someone at the door. Give me a sec. Can we go?
Yeah, go, man.
Delivery, I think we got food delivery.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I was like, if you're a YouTuber and you're looking to grow your audience, why wouldn't you like interact with people? So anyway, I just want to say, right, out of all the people I follow, you're one of the best. Like, I think the first, you know, couple of times I messaged you, we were talking about steak or something, you know, and because I saw some bullshit on the news over here and I was like, oh, I know a guy in Japan. I'll send him a message and see what he says. Man, you got back to me. Not only that, you went down to the supermarket, you took photos of like different carts and we figured out it's basically the same price. It was all bullshit. So, yeah, and your channel, man, it, like your little videos, they're so good. They're so informative because especially for somebody, you know, I would say even if you're not looking at moving to Japan, it's just so interesting to me and, you know, the way that you've put them all together and everything. So, yeah, I just first of all wanted to say, man, like
it's very amateur, but, that's all I can do at my age anyway.
Man, do you know what? It's funny, right? They're the actual – because I find with my podcast, right, the ones that are more just kind of like a chat like this, they get way more downloads. The ones like when I sit down with like people, let's say like celebrities, right?
Yeah.
And you do it like those people, they're very hard to crack, right? And like what you said before about the hour, 2 hour thing, like something happens, right, with those people after about an hour and a half, and you kind of like break through and you can finally start getting some fucking honest answers instead of like the, you know, the lines. But you literally, you need like more than an hour with those sort of people. But anyway, I find those ones, they rate good, don't get me wrong. But, you know, these ones are actually like better. And people like your channel, people just being real, you know. And, you know, obviously for Aussies, like watching, we all wonder, like, how the fuck did this guy end up in Japan? So I'll get to all that. So, but, yeah, I just wanted to say, first of all, like, yeah, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it because not everybody does it. And whenever, you know, we've been messaging on and off for a while now, on Patreon, I got you on there. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. So, yeah, first thing I want to ask you, man, is, like, whereabouts in Australia? Were you born in Australia, right? Or?
Yeah, I was born in Western Sydney. Everybody knows where I was, where I grew up is a place called Mount Druitt, which is famous for being a bit of a ghetto. So even someone in Perth like you would know mate, my suburb. And not only that, it was the worst place, the worst suburb in Mount Druitt, and not only that, it was the second worst street. So
really? Wow.
Couldn't have got worse.
What was that show? They did a show over here a while ago. It'll come to me in a minute.
They always
it was like a show about rough areas, yeah.
Yeah, the media always uses them for clicks. It's always been the case. Yeah. Poverty porn or whatever they call it.
Yeah, right. So how long did you live there for?
17 years.
Right, yeah. So you did all of primary school and high school there?
Yeah.
So, right, fuck. So you would have seen some pretty crazy shit in high school, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like what?
Oh, lots. Lot of.
This is adults only.
Yeah. A lot of fighting. Like I grew up pretty much fighting every couple of weeks, possibly.
Yeah.
So fairly rough, extremely multicultural. People talk about multicultural Australia. I mean, my area was 20 years in front of everybody. So most people that come to Australia generally go to the working class poorer areas because they can afford it, see? So,
yeah, that's right. But do you reckon that even though it was a bit rough, because I sort of the last 2 or 3 years of high school, I went to a private school, but before that it was all like big, rough public high schools. And same thing, you know, it was like, the bullies started picking on me, right? So that's kind of how I figured out how to fight back as well and how to be resilient and all those sort of things. You know, do you think it kind of gave you like a good grounding for stuff later? Or
yeah, I mean, well, definitely resilience. Yeah, I can live anywhere in the world that wouldn't bother me. So little things don't bother me, you know, not having everything doesn't bother me because that's how I've always been, so... some people sort of maybe they come from a richer area in Australia, and when they come to Japan, possibly they're disappointed because it's not how they thought it would be. And like in terms of wages and economic activity and stuff like that, so they get a little bit disappointed. They expect to at least have the same lifestyle, perhaps, for the amount of work they put in.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So, okay. So then after high school, so what did you do after that?
I got into university. I was the only, there's only two of us that got into university from the whole high school.
Wow.
And I had two choices because it was called a TER back then, tertiary entrance result, tertiary entrance rank.
Yeah.
And I could be a nurse or I could become a teacher. So I became I went into education. So my major was Mandarin Chinese and my minor was French. So I was a language teacher. So it was language agent studies degree.
So what made you choose that? Like the language, Chinese?
Well, it was for me, like I knew that the Chinese was going to be big in the future. So this is like 95 or whatever. I knew it was going to be big, but at the time, I think it was Keating was in, and he announced that every high school in Australia would have an Asian language, and it would be funded by the federal government. So all education comes out of state government funding, but the language teachers were going to come out of the federal budget. So they trained so many of us, different languages, Indonesian, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, and... when I was in my third year, Keating got voted out and Howard cut the funding. So there was no future to teach Mandarin. So if you have a look now, most schools don't teach Mandarin Chinese.
No,
and
that's
back
right.
Then there was only like 10 or 20 schools and they were all private schools. So unless you had an honours or something like that, you had no chance. And being an average student, that was not going to happen for me. So I was always cooking. So I went into... cooking, and I got myself a little business. So I just got rid of that. So I did 1 year in China at the university in Nanjing there. So my Chinese was quite a good level, but definitely not enough to take these 10 jobs or whatever that was available.
Yeah.
And I didn't really like it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Is that a hard language to learn? Seems like it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think English is probably the hardest if you weren't a native speaker. Because it changes so much. The more people that speak a language, then the more dynamic it is. So if only one culture sort of speaks a language, it doesn't change as much.
Yeah,
so
it's
easier to learn, I think.
So a policy change on the Hill changed your trajectory in life?
It changed everybody. So some people went and did a computer degree and some people became a primary school teacher and I was enjoying what I was doing in the kitchen and where I was working. The chef, he didn't want to do it anymore. So it was in a sporting club. So it was like a little sports bistro. I took it on. So I was married by that time. So me and my wife, we took on the business. So we're just running like a kiosk, sort of a bistro in a bowling club.
Okay. And had you always been interested in the cooking thing, or did that just kind of happen as well?
Always cooking. Growing up. We used to do lots of strange things with Weet-Bix and cheese on toast and whatever.
Yeah, sounds like me. Yeah.
You have to when you're poor. You sort of get a bit adventurous.
Yeah. Because I've sort of had the same thing, and we'll talk about it because I want to get to the oven and a few other things. But yeah, I've sort of got similar. I've never done it for a job, but it's something that's I've always been drawn to. So yeah, okay. So then you do the bistro thing. So how long does that last?
4 years, 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
And then what do you do after that?
Going through my resume.
I just sort of ballpark.
I had a couple of little jobs. So I worked for a couple of people as well, maybe for 6 months or a year. Then I had a little lawn mowing business actually for about a year. I had 30 customers. So I got out of the kitchen. I got a bit sick of that, and I gave it to someone else to run. So we're doing weddings and things as well, and dealing with brides. They're real pains. So the whole thing was a bit stressful, really, because we had to open every day, and I got a bit tired of it after 3 or 4 years. Yeah. So
you like
I had
cooking,
a whole change,
but you didn't like all the other bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have a day off, and I couldn't really take a day off. I was making a wage. I wasn't making a lot of money. There was really not a lot to keep me there, really. If I was making a lot of money, it might have been worth it, but it wasn't. It was a lot of time and a lot of dealing with people and the wedding side of it. Always these the bridesmaids get a bit more stress before the before the function and whatever, so I was a bit over it.
Yeah, I've heard that same story many times. A lot of people that are into cooking, it seems to be a common thing. We sort of enjoy doing it, but all the other stuff that goes with it. And, I got told early on because I did a bit of work in the kitchen, and the chef told me some things are best left kept as a hobby, And so I kind of filed it away. But
there's
as I get older.
There's not many chefs over 40. And there's not many my age, almost 50. So.
But, yeah, I think once you get to our age, because, I'm 52, you sort of start to realise that, maybe I could do this right, but, I can control it. So, in other words, what you're doing or, food van or markets or, whatever, instead of, pardon me, having to go into the whole, open a restaurant and all that kind of thing. So, So what basically led you to be in Japan, and how much time passed between sort of when you finished doing all that and before that?
Well, I moved to Japan 5 years ago or 5.5 years ago now, so that would put me about 43-ish. So my wife was in Australia for 22 years, so she's done her sort of half, so I didn't mind giving up everything in Australia and coming here and sort of doing what I was doing anyway. So for me, it's not. It doesn't matter really what country you're in, as long as you like what you're doing.
100%.
It's not going to fundamentally change you. If I moved to some other country, I'd still be doing what I like doing. So And in Japan, it's a lot easier to get a little bit of land and grow your own things, and the laws here are a little bit easier with the zoning, so you could have a restaurant like I got in front of it at the first half of my house. All that sort of stuff's impossible in Australia, so to be able to own something, which I never had in Australia, is a big draw card to be able to own your own physical premises.
I hear you loud and clear, man, because basically, so I'll tell you how I sort of came to Japan, so about at the end of the year of COVID, I had a heart attack. And don't worry, I didn't have the jab, so it didn't have anything to do with that. So basically nearly died, kind of survived. So then everything after that, man, life is different, because you literally just start looking at and don't worry, I was kind of already halfway down the rabbit hole of this whole way that people live, it's all bullshit, and I'm just not that kind of person. And I'm more sort of like, I like growing my own food, sourcing my own food, working. Like, I just have no interest in money at all, really. And look, I do okay. I'm not rich or anything, right? But, you know, I'm a tradie. Like, I sort of do okay. But it just doesn't interest me, right? And then what happens is when you nearly die, right, all that just gets sped up. Because, like, I got two stents in my heart now, Steve, right? So, I don't know, I might have 10 or 20, I could have like still 20, 25, 30 years left, but it might only be 10, right? So then you start thinking to yourself, what am I going to do? I got 10 summers left, right? What am I going to do with them? And I started literally writing down on pieces of paper, right, what was important to me, like what do I want my life to look like? And I realized, right, all those things, which I won't go into now because we'll just fucking bore everybody, but I just realized all those things are probably not in Australia. And for the reasons that you said, that I just couldn't probably own or do what I really wanted to do. Like if someone just said to me, Ira, if you could just do anything all day, what would that your day look like? You need fucking $3 million in this country to do that, yeah, you know?
Definitely.
So then, and then the other thing is around COVID too, right? There was a lot of stuff that happened, which we won't go into as well. But, you know, I'm like, you know, they brought in emergency power laws after that and they did things that were completely proven in the Supreme Court to be 100%, you know, unlawful. And, you know, if they start doing some of the things that are in those emergency laws, like, I seriously will be looking for somewhere else to live. Now, I'm not saying Japan's any better, right? But if you go into it, a lot of the Scandinavian countries are supposedly good to live in, but my ass is not moving to Scandinavia, right? So then you got to look, okay, what's close? What sort of fits the climate? And I kept sort of looking, and then Japan sort of just kept jumping up, you know? And then I sort of saw this thing about Akias, and I was like, oh, Akias, what the fuck's this, you know? And then I went to the page and went down the Akia rabbit hole, and I was completely, like, shocked, like, how this is even a thing. And then anyway, in the meantime, I did a podcast with a young guy, Harry Crossley, and he'd moved from the UK to Japan. And I started realizing, like, from a fishing point of view, right, the type of fishing that I like doing, which is like light line lure fishing, right? So trout, bream, all those kinds of things. If you break it down, right, Japan's actually probably the best place in the world, right? And you realize that most of the people live in the cities and that a lot of these country areas are still pretty much relatively untouched, you know? And like, if I want to die, you know, I might have 10 summers left, Steve. Do I want to be in Perth looking at fucking concrete buildings, right? Or do I want to be on an estuary somewhere in Japan? Right? Yep. The other thing is I started looking at the prices and then I started realizing. And then around about that time, is just after that, I think, is when I found you. And then I started watching you and now I probably follow about 10 or 15 people in Japan. You know, the Larrikin Japan, Moya. I pronounced that wrong, but that your friend Chani Japan, abroad Japan.
I don't follow Chani at all. I find that a bit. She's just moved to the suburbs. That's what I feel.
Yeah. But I just, all I'm saying is I find it interesting that a lot more people are sort of, you know, figuring out. So, you know, I guess the. You know, obviously, a few of the questions I want to ask you is because the other thing that really appealed to me about Japan, right, is it seems to be, and what Fam Harry tells me, and I see on your videos, right, like proper respect and community is like a real thing. And like here, Steve, you can't fucking leave your bike outside of the pub, right? Because if you go inside for half an hour, it'll be gone.
Yeah, I've had four cars stolen in Australia. I had one car stolen. I bought another one. 2 days later, it was stolen.
So that just doesn't happen in Japan, eh?
No. But that's because of the law. See, like if you left the bike outside the 7-Eleven and someone stole it and the police found it, that's jail time. And it's not like you're sitting in a cell and playing PlayStation and watching TV. I mean, you have to work and all that sort of thing. So, and then when you get out, nobody wants to hire you. There's just too much to lose. As well.
Yeah. The other thing is, but it is a bit of a cultural thing too, isn't it? Just like, you know, like I noticed, for example, at the end of the Japanese Formula One Grand Prix, right, the crowd fucking picks up all the rubbish.
Yeah.
And they leave the place spotless. Like, it just seems like it's so mind-blowing. And like, you know, I'm getting to this place where I'm a bit old, man, I'm a bit washed up, but I'm just like, there's so many there's so many fuck things in this country. I just said, why can't people just be a bit more nicer, a bit more respectful, you know? And like Harry, you know, we talk pretty regular on and off on Messenger, and he's just constantly telling me all the time how just nice people are.
It's like the 60s, 50s, 60s, Australia. So if you went to somebody's house and they cooked you dinner, most people at that time would just go in and wash their plate in the sink, being the guest. You know what I mean? Like
that's a good point, yeah.
Australia and a community, I mean, where I grew up, we used to just put bollards at the end of the street. We used to play cricket on the road. And people would just have to park their car out until the cricket was finished and the police wouldn't care. But now you have to get a permit to do this and that, and you probably wouldn't be allowed to play cricket on the street. Or if you could, it would cost you thousands of dollars in insurance. So that's and all this house flipping. So if people are flipping houses all the time, you don't get to know your neighbours anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And the sense of community, that's one thing I noticed watching your channel, is like how many things the community comes together and like does together, you know. So it's kind of like it's a cultural thing that starts when they're young, eh?
Yeah, but also there's an economic reason behind this. So if you have a look at Australia, so I don't know the prices, so don't quote me. Let's say you've got a house that's worth $800,000. And what are the rates? $5,000 a year? Would that be correct?
Yeah.
So let's say it's $5,000 a year, and that means that the council will look after everything. So the way it works in my village is you pay $500 a year, and you look after everything. So we clean the river, we clean the gutters of the street. We look after if there's any trees that might be of danger, we'll go and cut them down. We'll put all our rubbish in one spot so it's cheaper for the person to pick up. We'll make sure that the recycling is 100% perfect. So the recycling company can make money when they pick it up. So there's an economic incentive to look after these things. But if they're not looked after, the people that, say, pick up the rubbish or whatever, they say, well, this community is not doing it right and my costs have gone up, so you're going to have to charge more. And then your rates would go up. So there is community, but there also is an economic thing there too.
Yeah, but by nature, it's saving money, but it's also bringing people together, because when they go do those jobs, they actually have to talk to each other, because that's part of the problem in the suburbs of Perth now. So I live, you know, in the hills, like sort of behind Perth. But when I used to live down the hill, what you said, mate, no one in the street like even knew each other really, or would talk to each other. No one waved to each other. And it went from that to like when I was a kid, like what you said, all the kids in the street all played together.
Yeah.
You know? And it's amazing how just such a small thing can make such a big difference. Yeah.
I think the main thing I've found is the monetization, the right word, the monetization of properties. And that's destroyed. So people look at house and community as investments. So they don't look at their lifestyle as an investment or their relationships as an investment. They look at their house as an investment. So, for example, if someone's got a really dodgy front yard and it's got 10 unregistered cars in front of it, the first thing they think of is, oh, my house or this area is going to go down in value, not, oh, we should go and help this guy out. You know what I mean? Like the mentality is a bit different. It's changed, you know?
Yeah, and it's a real cultural thing, and like it's, I don't know, disappoints me about Australia. We just got to breed more better humans somehow, you know, because, But anyway, that's a whole other podcast. We won't get into that. So I wanted to ask you about Akias. So you've got, I'll recommend anyone listening, if they want to know more, go on your channel, which I'll put all the links at the bottom, at the end and that. But, yeah, if you could give, like, people a brief, if someone was looking at, you know, going over there, can you give us, like, a brief sort of rundown on the do's and the don'ts?
This is my philosophy, and there's so many examples, and there's people who actually have Akia channels, and they're putting out a different persona, or they put out a different image of what their life actually is. So if a place is super cheap and it's on an Akia bank, so it's just a web portal and it's got all these cheap houses and they're $5,000-$6,000 or whatever, people who list houses on there generally 99% of the time, the community's not strong, so they don't care who buys it. Right. Do you get what I mean? Whereas a community that's strong, a person wouldn't sell their house to just anybody because they don't want to leave leave their friends in a mess, basically. So a lot of the houses that are on the IKEA banks are in absolutely terrible areas with very bad futures. But this is what people push a lot on the YouTube because they don't know and they don't actually live in a nice area themselves because they bought a cheap house. Yeah. You know what I mean? So with buying one, you really should check out the area because villages even 5 kilometers apart will have a different mentality.
Yeah.
They've had a different history. Like my area, if you went over the mountain, it's only 2 kilometers away. They're very insular. They're very closed in. So they're not as warm as people here.
Yeah.
So that, you know, during the wartime, you know, they had, caves and stuff where they used to put the food. So that they've got this sort of old style prepper mentality that the world's after them. So every place isn't the same, even in the same city. Yeah.
That's one thing that I've realized because like Harry, he's up north in Hokkaido. So that's almost a whole nother country, really.
Completely. Prefecture to prefecture, village to village, it's all going to be different. Like a lot of houses, like I reckon there's 12 million houses or something that's empty.
Yeah.
But the IKEA banks wouldn't even have half of 1% on them.
Yeah.
Because so really, a lot of the houses don't get listed. They're all off market. Like the really good ones are all off market. Unless you know the people and they like you, you're not going to be introduced to them.
So really what you got to do is do your homework and go there and have a look.
Yeah. So I was in contact with a person that lived in my village for 6 months before I bought my place. This wasn't even on the market. It was on the market because I got to know him. He knew what I wanted to do and I needed enough space for a car park. And I also didn't have money to buy 2 buildings. So it had to be a cafe house together. So this was off the market and that's how I got it. But it was never listed anywhere.
And so when you bought it, the oven was not there, eh?
Nothing. It was a mess inside. Like it was all cleaned out, but I had to fix the floors.
There's a few shots on some of your videos. There's a few shots. So tell me about the oven because like that kind of like that's really sort of when you blew me away. I was like, so anyway, we can probably keep going. It won't matter if that's in the background. Man, a bit of character on the podcast doesn't kill. I don't give a fuck. Anyway, I just do what we want on here. So tell me about the oven, man. So did you just have an idea straight away, pretty much?
I always wanted to do the oven, like a wood-fired oven, but got the house done. So we did like a bare bones renovation.
Yeah.
And I had just enough to buy refrigeration, the very basics I needed for a kitchen. So I just started up doing burgers opened, little mini burgers. Yeah. And then that winter, I was going to build the oven. And what happened, we had a big storm come through and it left about 2,000 homeless in Nagano. It just wiped out whole streets, flooded. Yeah, so I had to shut the cafe. I went and started demolishing IKEAs. So I went with a local building, a demolition company, and I went around Nagano just knocking down houses. So all these old IKEAs that people didn't want and whatever, and also buildings, so old noodle shops and things like this. So, and then I reopened and then Corona hit and then that was it. Like the customers stopped totally. That 2 months I built the oven, I thought, this is a perfect time to build the oven.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I built the oven as soon as that was sort of like these restrictions came in. But the restrictions in Japan weren't heavy at all. Like everyone, you could do whatever you wanted.
Interesting.
But the thing is, the people didn't want to go out anyway, so it wouldn't matter what the restrictions were. Whereas the Aussies wanted to go out, but they got hassled, yeah?
Yeah.
But the Japanese didn't have the restrictions, but they didn't want to go out. So
Because they didn't want to. Yeah, right. That's so interesting.
Where I am anyway, like Tokyo was a bit different, but out where I am, like, yeah, nobody wanted, you know, to get sick or whatever. So they didn't come.
Yeah, so right. So it just slowed everything down. That was a good time. Oh, well, I mean, you made hay while the sun shined. Yeah, because a lot of people did a lot of stuff through COVID. And I think COVID here too, right, because everyone was stuck inside. So it kind of did a little bit of that, what I was saying before, showing people what they should be doing with their day. Because a lot of people started concentrating on this and that and started realizing, because I know a lot of people who have actually kind of changed their work environment since then. So yeah, okay. So, and then how long did the oven take you to build? A couple of months?
Took me a couple of months, but I wasn't working that hard every day, like
just chip away. Just
bit here and a bit there,
as you do. Yeah.
And I was reading that book by David Graeber called Bullshit Jobs. Have you heard of it?
No, I don't.
He wrote
think
this
so,
book. Yeah. He just passed just before the corona. He wrote this book and it's called Bullshit Jobs. And he outlined how literally 95% of jobs are bullshit jobs that aren't needed.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the lines in Australia outside Centrelink. So had a lot of guys, you know, who thought their jobs would never go away. And they're out in front of Centrelink for the first time in their lives. And I'm like, these guys are like office workers, obviously.
Yeah.
And the economy still kicked along, didn't it, in Australia, even though these office workers weren't there.
Oh, man.
It still managed to kick along. And prices were going up everywhere. I couldn't believe it.
In some states, 40% of people work for the government.
Really?
Right, yeah. And here's an interesting thing, backing up what you were saying, right? Don't know if you follow, but in Argentina, this libertarian president has got in, Javier, right? And so he's cutting all this bullshit government departments that don't need to be there, right? And I'd never forget, a reporter asked him a question and said, oh, what are all these people going to do now? You know, they're getting rid of their jobs. And he gave the absolute best answer. He just said, you know what they'll probably do? Something productive. Because he said 95% of people are doing bullshit jobs that are not fulfilling and they're not productive, and hopefully this will lead them. And here's another example, right? Just random thought, but I always remember this. I saw this YouTube video, right, because I got an interest in doing a food truck or something similar. And this video came up on YouTube, top 10 new food trucks in America, right? So bang, I'm going to go watch it, right? So I go watch it. Every single one of those guys only started that food truck when they got sacked from other jobs.
Yep. And they do like one dish really well sort of thing. That's their model, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So it's amazing, you know, backing up what you were saying, like a lot of people just, yeah. So yeah, because that's really what I like about what you're doing. You're just doing what you want to do. You know, I just think more people should live like that. And it seems to me like more people live like that in Japan. Is that true or not really?
Yeah. How do I explain it? You've got, it's best to maybe talk about the history of Japan. So when the war finished, what happened is you had a lot of guys with nothing to do, yeah?
Yeah.
So a lot of soldiers coming back, the place was devastated, there's nothing to do. So what they did, the occupation forces, the MacArthur and whatever, is they gave high-ranking officers the task of setting up a factory. So they'd say, okay, you're going to be a toaster factory and you're going to make cars and whatever. So they built up a working culture that was from the military. So that's why the Japanese, when they go to work, they get briefed, and when they finish, they get debriefed. Wow. And they sing a company song, and that all comes from the military. So a lot of people that were in sort of the country areas, they moved into the city because it was the only place you could get money. I mean, you could grow vegetables, but you couldn't get money.
Yeah.
Because nobody had money. So everybody moved from the cities into the countryside, and they all lost track of their relatives. So if you're of the other side of the country working in a car factory, you've totally lost touch sometimes with your family.
Yeah.
So these people have never left. So there's a divide. So the people that are living in the cities, if you look at all their last names and everything, they're even got their last names is even their old village, you know, from only 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And these people are totally unlike where I live. So like Japan's not one monogamous thing. People like to think Japan's all one thing. It's not.
No.
The culture in the cities are totally different. They like their lattes and their Starbucks and all their bullshit. You know, and they're never going to come back to do digging the ground up and, you know, growing daikon radishes. That's not going to happen. So I have nothing to do with that side of Japan, but it's big. Like, there's 30 million just in the Tokyo metropolitan. That's a lot of people.
That's crazy. That's more.
And they're totally unlike any of the people, you know, I mix with.
Yeah, that's one thing I've realized. And even the individual areas, like, I don't know, you could almost break it up into like quarters kind of thing, because I follow a couple of YouTubers that do a lot of fishing, you know, and that's one thing, because I always just had this preconceived idea, right? Japan was like fished out, right? I know it sounds stupid, but that's just kind of what I thought. And then I started following these YouTubers and I realized, especially the ones in the country, and I realized, oh, there's the country and then there's the city, Japan, and it's completely different, you know, and I was looking at where they were living and, you know, what they're doing and all that kind of stuff, and yeah, just really spun me out just how different it really was.
And another thing too, with the fishermen, they get chased a lot by the young women too. They love the old fishermen.
Oh, really?
So,
man, it's so popular.
Like, they're sort of like the hot tradies in Australia. Like, a lot, you've got groupies that like after rich tradies. In Japan, you've got young, pretty women that like to get themselves like a rich fisherman. A lot of those guys make coin.
Oh man, I follow probably half a dozen professional Japanese anglers, and like I watch all the videos on the big fishing shows. It's fucking insane, man.
Sometimes they get insane. One fish is like $20,000 or something.
Oh yeah, well most people go to like Lake Biwa, right? That's probably the most famous, like, lure largemouth bass fishery in the world, because a few world records have been there. The interesting thing is, right, all the tournaments seen in America, which is like a multi-hundred-million-dollar, billion-dollar business, they all fish for largemouth bass, right? But if you want to catch a big one, you got to go to Japan. So everybody goes there, and this whole economy, like, there's something like 800 boats just stored at the boatyard.
Really?
That's just dudes that don't take their boats home. They just leave them there. They rock up. They put them in the water. So, yeah, it's just a whole different country. And I started realizing, wow, this country is like, it's not what I thought it was. It's like totally different to how I had this preconceived idea of what Japan's really like.
Yeah. So I've got a friend that's opening up a bar in Nagano City, right near the train station. And he's called it Angler Bar. So his model is, because a lot of cashed up guys, you know, people might think, you know, like the countryside, nobody's got any money. There's people with a lot of money too. And they've got these boats that you're probably talking about.
And
he set up an Angler Bar, and they go in and they have like draft beer, and he's got all these lures on the counter with paint. And they sit there just drinking their beers and painting lures and just talking about fishing. He's got a really popular place.
I reckon there's a really untapped business idea, and look, I'm not saying I'm gonna do it right, but I'm definitely gonna come. My son's in year 12, so I've got to get him through that, but then probably the year after I'll be coming over to have a look. Because see, there's a funny thing, right? In Australia, the most popular fish that most anglers chase is actually just brim, right? But a 40 centimeter brim is considered like a trophy brim, right? But heaps of anglers, like, it might take you 5 or 10 years to get one of them, right? I'm watching these guys in Japan. They're catching them every day, right? And they're catching 45s, 50s. So where I'm getting to, right, is, like, I actually reckon if someone set up a bit of a guiding business over there where Aussies could, like, go over, have somewhere to stay, you have boats, you take them out fishing, I reckon there's I'm not saying it would work, but there definitely seems to be potential. And I even thought about maybe just doing it for a short season. Like, you know, you do it for like 3 months of the year in the best weather, that kind of thing. What do you think of that?
Well, if you've got the money to come to Japan just for fishing, what's the problem to give you a few hundred bucks for you to take them out? You know, like, if the market's there, then you're perfectly fine. You've only got to work out how many do you think are going to come here for fishing. Once you work out the size of that market, you'll be fine. So if the market's massive, you only need like two or three guys per day and you're making good money. Well,
it's pretty big in Australia. Like Brisbane lures, like it's massive. Like, and, you know, anglers fly all over the country just to chase them. So
what the about the big tunas and stuff?
Oh, yeah, all that as well. You know, you've got all that. And, like, people don't realize too, right, but there's actually one of these YouTubers I follow, he's catching barramundi, like, in the south of Japan there. So there's options for, like, all – and, like, they're just general fishing, right, that one of the ones I follow is Nora.
Is it barramundi or it's barramundi type fish?
No, it's a barramundi, yeah.
Really? I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yeah, and neither did I. They've got a name for them.
Because I've heard of Nile perch and that, and they sell that as barra.
They've actually got barra because they go all the way up through Indonesia and that. And, yeah, I looked it up and did some research, and, yeah, one of these YouTube channels, man, this young guy, he's fucking catching, like, meter-long barra out of a kayak. The thing, like, tows him all around the estuary and shit. And I was like, man, you can't tell me that Aussies wouldn't be, like, down for a bit of that. And the other thing is it's not just that, right? I can just tell because, like, at the risk of sounding like a wanker, I had a whole fishing career. I did it as a professional angler for probably about 10 or 15 years. I won a few tournaments, state champion, a few other things. So I got an idea is what I'm saying, right? And I can tell just by looking at the water and watching these guys, these places are incredible. They're like, it's like untapped paradise. You literally probably, a lot of those fish in a lot of those country areas, right, probably never even seen people really.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I worked out too, right, because the way Japan's shaped, it's got the second or third longest shoreline in the world.
Yeah, right? So many little bays.
Yeah, but only beaten by Canada, Russia, I think, and Australia. But you think about Canada, Russia, how much of that can you get to, right? Most of it's remote. The thing with Japan, if you've got a little tinny with a 30 horse, you could probably get to 90% of all that water. So I actually reckon it's a bit of an untapped thing.
I think for taste, like the cold water fish tastes better. The Aussie fish is sort of coming from the warmer water. So yeah. I don't think the fish tastes as good in Australia as it does in Japan.
I've heard other people say that, yeah. Yeah, well, their seafood grades better. Do you know that? When they go to the markets and they generally grade it, it always grades higher.
Yeah, because I think because of the cold water, maybe it has more fat, maybe in the flesh. I'm not sure.
Something about it. Yeah.
It's definitely the fish here tastes so much better than the Australian fish. The fish around Tassie, where I lived in Tassie, they had I forget the names, but they had like two or three really endemic species, and all of them were magnificent, but so expensive.
Cold water. Yeah, that's the thing, the price. So, yeah, anyway, keep moving. So I wanted to ask you about just in the time that I've been taking notice of Japan, right, I've noticed how much the visas have changed. And even like on your channel, you know, every couple of months you're doing a video about, okay, these people can come here. Now these people can you tell me a little bit about that, how much that's changing? And if somebody, like, let's just use me for perfect example, right, because I'm a painter and decorator by trade.
Yep.
So if someone like me was to come over, I also grow seedlings and vegetables for a living, and I can do guiding work as well. Is there, you know, tell me a little bit about that sort of thing.
So basically they've had like I think 9 areas that have been available for setting up a business, and that's going to go nationwide. That was announced in January. So for these areas, they'd have certain industries. So, okay, if you want to set up a tourism industry, so in your example, could be fishing, homestay, whatever, you know, something to do with entertaining tourists. Yeah. So once it goes fully nationwide and there's no restrictions on what type of business you can do, you could set up a painting and decorating company. You know what I mean? Oh, as long as you meet, you've got. They've got like little things like you must have an office and you must invest minimum $50,000 and a couple of things. But, I mean, it's nothing like the red tape in Australia.
Yeah. That's what's attractive about it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. One thing I wanted to ask you about Japanese people, their sense of humour. What's it really like, you know, coming from someone who was an Aussie, you know, born and bred? Do they get it or not really?
No, like sarcasm's out. They don't understand sarcasm at all. I mean, even the oldies when I was growing up, sarcasm's the lowest form of wit, but that's, I love sarcasm.
Yeah, so
you can't be sarcastic. You can't say things that are sort of at somebody's cost. You know what I mean?
You can't pull the piss.
Yeah. So like, if it's sort of like everyone's laughing at that person, that shouldn't happen. Right. So it's more, it's quite lame, really.
So but what do they laugh at?
You know, a little bit of slapstick, a little bit of, you know, strange things that happen or whatever, you know. It's not I've never bursted out laughing over what a Japanese has told me.
Yeah.
Put it that way, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I see, like, they all sit there on the train just, like, all nice and quiet, you know.
I mean, they'll relax more or whatever, but if you're in Australia, say I went to your house, it's sort of your job to entertain me.
Yeah.
So you'd put some food out and you'd maybe tell me some jokes and sort of make me laugh.
Yeah.
Possibly, you know, like, it's your job to make sure the person is entertained. In Japan, it's not like that. Your job is, if somebody comes, is to make them relaxed, not to get their blood running and laughing. You know what I mean? Like, so you have a nice chill time.
Interesting. Completely different approach, eh? So what do you reckon, what's the best thing about living in Japan, just overall?
People don't get in your shit, really.
Yeah.
You could do whatever you want, but there's not too many obstacles put in front of you. You own what you do. So if you make mistakes, you don't, the culture here is not to blame other people. So you get a bit more mature as well.
Yes.
I was a little bit more mature. I think most foreigners that come here are a bit immature, and they learn quickly, you know, that you've sort of got to take responsibility for certain things. You know, if a lot of people whinge about their companies, a lot of people whinge about this and that. And at the end of the day, it's always them that's the problem. Japan's not the problem. I mean, a lot of happy people here, but a lot of foreigners come and they get unhappy because their expectations and maybe their what they think about themselves is not what it is. You know what I mean? They think they have more to offer than what they really do. So you get humbled as well.
Yeah. The thing that appeals to me, what you're saying about people not getting in your shit, because, like, you know, I'm getting to the point where, like, I'm thinking about leaving Australia because it's just so overregulated. Like, you know, in my state at the moment, Steve, if I want to go fishing, right, 9 different fishing licenses, like 9 different things I've got to have plus all the other stuff. And it's just like, I like the fact that in Japan, it kind of seems to me like people just sort of, because, like, I watch a lot of videos, right, and people say, oh, one of the worst things about, you know, being in Japan is no one really talks to you. And I'm thinking, fucking hope so. You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking for a place where people just leave me alone and don't necessarily want to talk to me. I'm getting to the last bit of my life, you know what I mean? I don't want to be bothered, and you can call it grumpy old man or whatever, but that's kind of what appeals to me about Japan. It seems like people pretty much sort of leave you alone.
Yeah, like, it's quite normal if you're at Coles or Woolies, in line, somebody will turn around and start talking to you.
Yeah, that's quite right.
Normal. In Japan, that's like super creepy.
Yeah.
So you have your friends, you have the people you go with, you have your little clubs and your social circles, and you sort of got to be vetted before you get in there. You know what I mean? Like, whereas in Australia, people will go and talk to anybody sometimes sitting in a line, but you don't know if the guy got out of jail yesterday.
Yeah, too trusting. It's such a cultural difference. So what do you reckon is, I asked you what the best thing is, what's the worst thing about living in Japan?
The worst? I think all life stresses are the same. They're just different. So what's bad about Australia is what's bad about here too. So paying your bills, sometimes not having enough money to pay your bills, having bills, you know, you have different stresses, but you have different compromises for it. So in Australia, here's a good one. In Australia, let's say I had a bill that was $5,000. I know that I can go and earn the money quite quickly because the wages are quite high. So I can go and work 2 or 3 extra shifts in the kitchen for a couple of months and I'll have that money cash very quickly. Yeah. That's not going to happen in Japan. So the wages are low. So to accumulate sort of money fast for some emergency is very difficult. So that's one thing that's a negative about Japan. So being able to get money fast if you work really hard, that's difficult. So you can work like a dog in Japan, it doesn't mean you're going to be paid well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think they're getting better at that? But because they seem like, I was reading some thing and might have even been on your channel saying how, you know, Japanese people do work a lot compared to other people, but it's coming down, I think.
They work long hours. It doesn't mean they work hard. So you can be at work for 10 hours, but only do 2 hours worth of work.
Interesting. Yeah, I've seen that in Australia on construction sites. Because one thing I noticed, like, about Aussies is they tend to get there sort of early or even on early or on time, smash it out and nick off, you know. And I noticed, like, other, won't name any specific cultures, but, you know, there was people from other countries and they were more like, you know, they get there an hour late, they stand around for a bit, they do a bit of work, they have a long lunch break, they do a bit more in the afternoon and then they fuck off early. So I guess the same thing happens over there.
In Japan, the longer you work, people equate that to working hard. Yeah. So that's, for me, that doesn't make sense, but it does here.
Yeah.
So if you spend you get up at 6 in the morning and you come back at 8 at night, your wife thinks, oh, yeah, he's working really hard, but he could have done nothing all day.
You know? Yeah. So really the best kind of candidate for someone to go to live in Japan is maybe someone who's getting towards the end of their life and who's got a bit of money and is sort of looking to retire and, you know, not heaps of money, but, yeah, would you agree with that? That's probably
a good option? Like young kids, say when I was 20, Japan wouldn't be suitable for me.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, I find the cities boring in Japan. Like if you come as a tourist and all the bright lights and whatever and the bars and things, okay, it's great for 2 weeks, but it doesn't have, you know, I'm from Sydney, so it doesn't have the character of a Sydney. You know what I mean? It's still very hospital-like.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? It's not edgy.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of, it might look edgy, but it's not.
Bit sterile.
Yeah. That's what I find anyway.
Yeah, because when I look at the city stuff, like Tokyo, when you said 2 weeks, I was thinking 2 days, man, I reckon.
Yeah.
I'll have a look around there for 2 days. And all the places that I actually really want to see are in the country. Because here's one thing I'll ask you. Some of the videos that I've been watching of, like, on YouTube, like, honestly, like, probably the most up there with the most spectacular scenery on earth. What do you reckon? Japan. Like, some of the shit that I've seen.
Everywhere is awesome.
It's fucking incredible. And it's like, it's up there with like Canada, like in that type of just scenic, like, yeah, I don't know. There's something about it. And especially like in the autumn, like up some of those river valleys, like it's just, yeah, I could stand there and just look at that shit all day, man.
Yeah. Because it's got so much water. Japan's got a massive, massive population because they've got so much water. If you don't have water, you can't have food, you can't have people. That's why Japan's such a tiny island, but it's always had like 100 million people. There's just little rivers, streams, and there's water everywhere.
It's funny you say that because when I was saying before about a few of those things that I wrote down that's important to me, because I'm an angler and I like river fishing, like water's a big thing to me, right? The other thing is I've got a business where I grow seedlings and sell them at the market, so water's a big thing there too, right? And the problem is where I live is literally for me to sort of have the garden and the setup that I want, I need more water.
And like, it costs you a fortune.
And I can turn more water on, but yeah, exactly what you said. I might as well just get like a fistful of hundreds and go out the front and fucking burn it. It'll be quicker. Because, you know, and that's one thing I noticed, like watching all these like videos on Japan, because don't worry, I'm looking to, and even on your videos, right, I see all these little drains going down and I'm like, man, there's fucking water everywhere. And almost every property has sort of got like water, like running past.
Constantly flowing,
And what you said about being such an essential part of life, it's one of the things Japan's really got going for.
Japan's 80% mountains.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot of like water just running off everywhere. A lot of little streams and it's everywhere. It's actually an issue. Like it costs the government a lot of money to fix these things when there's a storm and whatever.
Yeah, it does damage every time. I know.
Everywhere, that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, a couple more questions and then we'll start wrapping up. I was going to ask you, so if someone was looking to move there, do they really need to learn Japanese? What would your recommendation be there?
Just the basics is fine. But if you're a moron, it doesn't matter how good your Japanese is. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of people in Australia that speak perfect English, but nobody wants anything to do with them. So it's to do with your personality. Yeah. And your knowledge. So if you're going to start a business, it doesn't matter how good your Japanese is. If you're a moron, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So you have to have life experience, and the language comes, you know, some people learn languages really quickly. Everyone has a different talent. My Japanese is always going to be fundamental. My English is never perfect either. You know, you could pick 50 grammatical mistakes, even in English, when I do my videos. So it's not something I worry about. As long as you can communicate the basics, and if you have an interest in fishing, of course your vocabulary is going to be massive because you're going to have to need it and you're going to be using it. So I know a lot of words in Japanese about farming that native Japanese don't know because I need to know it.
Yeah.
So you sort of know, you learn what you want to learn, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and what you said about don't be a dickhead kind of thing, don't be a moron.
You don't get a second chance in Japan.
Yeah.
Once you're labeled a moron, it's forever.
Yeah.
Like in your area. Yeah. In the cities you can get away with it. But if you're living in a village or something, you fuck up once, that's it.
Yeah. What do you reckon is the biggest misconception that people have about Japan that's not really how it is?
That it's run well, that it's efficient.
Oh really?
They always quote the Shinkansen. The trains run on time. The Shinkansen's run on time because it's a private company. Everything else in Japan doesn't.
Really? That's interesting. And so why is that? Why is that? Just because it's so?
Because there's an economic incentive to have it on time, isn't it?
Whereas yeah.
There's no economic incentive for a government worker to do their job efficiently, is it? Even in Australia.
No.
So everything's same thing slow. Happens here. Everything's slow, the bureaucracy's slow. They're still using Inkan stamps instead of signatures. If you want to buy a car, there's three different government agencies that you've got to contact. The police need to go and check your car spot before you can pick up your car. And it's all this sort of stuff that is totally inefficient.
Wow, that's interesting because, I've always had the impression it's like this real, real efficient, you know, short, sharp, everything's... Yeah, that's
it's half-assed. Everything's half-assed.
Yeah.
The computer systems, like if you went, say, Medicare, the tax office, certain other government agencies, there are apps and they're all sort of – there's some synergy there, at least with the government, you know, like of how the bureaucracy sort of has some meaning to it. But everything's just all over the place here. Wow. There's no you know, it's like the 60s was in Australia.
Wow, that's crazy. And what about healthcare? What's the general healthcare like?
Healthcare is like it was in Australia in the 80s. Just go in there and it's free. But when I say free, it's a couple of bucks, you know, $5 to see the doctor or something. Yeah. But I remember in the 80s when I grew up, whenever I needed to go to the doctor, it was never an issue. But now it's like a big issue. I don't understand it. They haven't. Maybe the insurances for the doctors have gone up and they're not becoming doctors. The cost to become a doctor has gone up, I think, too. If you went to medical school in the 70s, it was free. But if you want to become a doctor now, you probably have to put up $200,000 hex money or something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's a risk. Maybe they don't have enough doctors. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I don't know enough about it, to be honest, but I think some of it does have to do with Medicare and bulk billing as well. Because I always hear people banging on about that. Like some doctors, you have to pay, some you don't, basically. And it literally comes down to whether they're listed by the government or some stupid shit. But, yeah, back to the healthcare, I just wanted to ask you, like, so is there, you know, because I figure there's big cities, so there's good hospitals everywhere. What's it like in the country where you are?
I've got still good? Three hospitals within 10-minute drive.
Wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I guess that's the difference of having lots of people. That's part of the problem in Australia. we suffer because not enough people sometimes.
So Australia is too spread out, whereas Japan, as I said, only 20% of the area is lived on. So you can have, and it's quite narrow. Japan, the country's quite narrow. So trains, it's worth having a good train system because you can service more of the people. Yeah. Whereas these sort of things in Australia don't work. Trains don't work in Australia. Do they have trains in Perth?
Yeah, yeah, we've got a train system. But, yeah, it's a bit – and, look, to be honest, they're actually overhauling it at the moment. So because it was pretty old school, like the Perth – it goes from Perth to Armidale, Perth to Midland, and then there's a Perth to Joondalup, which goes up the middle of the freeway because that's new. But the Armidale and the Midland lines go through the suburbs, right? So all these rail crossings and, mate, basically the amount of people that die or the – accidents that happen, so now they're elevating the whole line, so the whole line is going to be like 20-30 feet off the ground all the way from Armidale to Perth, which is like, I don't know, it's probably about 15 or 20 k's. But yeah, so at the moment in Perth there's no trains.
They couldn't run a Perth to Fremantle non-stop service, can they, because they don't have the people?
No, that's right. Or they do, they run Perth to Fremantle, they run there's two trains in the morning, I think, that run no stations, basically. So that's like in peak hour.
Well, in Japan, they run like 3 an hour.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, just not enough people. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have
And they're only servicing just to Fremantle. Like, there's not much else, you know what I mean?
No, so that's right.
Australia's too big for a lot of things. Yeah. The roads here are so much better than Australia because. You don't need them as long, you know?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that, the roads, because when you said before about being inefficient, I always thought, oh, with the roads in Japan, like if something goes wrong, they seem to repair it really quick, or is that just a...
I've probably seen 2 potholes in 5 years.
Yeah, I like some of my favorite videos, the ones where you just drive around and just talk. Because what happens is, man, like I'm doing shit at home, so I put it on, right? And it's like I get to drive around Japan sitting next to you fucking listening to a talk. So, yeah, I really like those ones because you get to see the scenery and I'm always looking at the houses and, like, because I'm looking at – because I'm into growing plants, you know, so I'm always looking at people's setups like
I do that mainly in winter because there's not much farming happening.
Driving around, so
the farming's coming on now. Yeah, there'll be a lot more farming stuff.
Yeah, cool. All right, man. That's pretty much it. I've got one more question I want to ask you. Just want to say thanks again for your time. It's been really good to be able to sit down with you and actually have a chat. Like I said, I love your channel. And I saw, I've got to ask 2 things. How's Gigi? But also,
he's sleeping at the moment. It's 1 o'clock. Yeah, it's his lunch sleeping.
I reckon he should have his own YouTube channel. What do you reckon?
He's a bit of a legend.
He's a bit of a star, for sure. So, yeah, and I saw the video you did the other day, actually, with the care package.
I got another one delivered, 2 days ago, so I'm going to do another one tomorrow night.
I was going to actually say to you, if you want anything, man, I'm happy to, send you something. So I don't know, what you're allowed to send and what you're not allowed to send, whether you can send, even Vegemite and shit like that. But we'll talk off air.
Just bring a couple of Mars bars when you come to Japan to chuck in the mail.
Mars bars. Yeah, because I was going to ask, what are those ladies like? Like, if they got to pick, what would they pick?
They don't like strong flavors, so mints, cinnamons, nutmeg, anything with that's not a native sort of spice. I think the only thing they sort of like is maybe rosemary, but that's about it. Everything about else is not.
Yeah, because I was thinking Mars bars or violet crumbles, Kit Kats. It's
too sweet for them.
Too sweet?
Yeah, what is a normal chocolate bar is like eating sugar to them.
Yeah, right.
So the sweets in Japan are horrible.
Yeah.
They're tasteless.
If you just got them to line up all the Aussie stuff, what would they pick?
What do they like? I have to ask my wife. Kumiko, what did the girls like the most of the snacks last time? The macadamia nougat was their favorite.
Oh, yeah, because it's kind of...
So it's sort of like the summer roll, you know, that nougat that's in the middle of the summer roll? Yeah, they like that.
Yeah, we got some good. I got a Italian lady just down the road from me makes nice nougat. Yeah, because it's not as sweet. Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
And they like the frogs, but that was on a different box. Like a couple of weeks ago, I got some red frogs.
Yeah.
They like the red frogs as well.
And what about, have they ever tried Vegemite?
Yeah, they hate it.
They hate it. No. Did you? Yeah, most people. What, do you like it?
I've even given them a proper one out the oven, like a proper proper cheesy mite scroll out the oven.
Yeah, no, one. Still won't didn't eat like. Oh, man, some of the stuff that comes out of your oven, me and my son were watching one of your videos. I think you made calzone. My son just looks at me and he goes, Dad, we're going to go get calzone. All right, man. Well, I better let you go. So, just wanted to say thanks again, man. I really appreciate you actually, like, backing up what you say because a lot of YouTubers don't necessarily do it. And, for anyone thinking about following along, subscribing, even if you never ever want to go there, I find it's just a really interesting channel and I find the interesting differences between the culture and all that. And even if you're like me and you're in Australia and you're starting to think that this place is a bit fucking expensive, then your channel's worth checking out for that reason.
The Aussies are already coming.
Yeah.
In droves.
I can see a big wave. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just much more interesting place to live. And what you said, I reckon you nailed it before, when you said, you realised that you couldn't afford to have really what you wanted here, but there you can.
Oh, I'd still be working for someone back home.
Yeah.
And how long can you be working in the kitchen when you're 50? My back's already sore, That's why I only open 3 days a week.
But, oh, man, to me, you're living the dream. Like, I look at what you're doing and think, fuck, man. He's just doing what he wants. Like, working 5-6 days a week, I reckon's got knobs on it. Do what you want a couple of days a week and then, you're looking after or doing your other stuff and, I'm really enjoying it. All right, Steve, thanks again, mate.
No worries, man. Intense chemistry, they expect the list when we sound the list. Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Best be aware, man.